I wonder if sort of this would be driven from the Apple end, or whether this is something that is just the next inevitable step of sort of legislation around in-app or sort of on-platform commerce.
Hello and welcome to the 87th episode of Floorcast, the NFT podcast. Today I'm joined by two Chris's again. Chris K, how are you?
Hey, I'm good. I'm glad to be back. I missed you all last week.
Oh yeah, you weren't here last week, right?
What was that about? That was so, like, strange. A Floorcast episode with no Chris K is... I don't know when the last time that's happened.
I just want to take a week off. I don't know. Am I not allowed to do that?
You're always, always welcome to do that. You have come back wearing another shirt, which is...
Hey,
it's becoming a bit of a habit now.
I don't know why this is unusual. Listeners, I wear shirts. Chris, you can vouch for this, right? I occasionally dress smart.
Chris does occasionally dress smart and always in a shirt. At least when I see it.
Yes.
Chris Madden, how are you?
I'm well. I was about to say it's a nice Web3 Wednesday, but then I realized it was Tuesday. It will be by the time. When does this drop? When does the episode release?
Tomorrow, Web3 Wednesday.
Happy Web3 Wednesday, everybody.
That was like a new offshoot show.
Someone is doing this somewhere, for sure, right?
Probably. I mean, who's not found some sort of Web3 content niche at this point? TK, what's exciting you at the moment in the world of Web3?
Web3...
Give me an opposite of a Chris K rant.
No, I don't know about Web3. It's iPhone day today. I'm excited about that. It's the one of two fantastic days of the year where Apple announced new shiny things.
Plus one. We're doing a viewing party at the office.
Oh, wow. What edition of the iPhone do you think will have a built-in custodial wallet?
The iPhone 17. Ooh. Ultra.
So you're talking like 2.5 years from now.
I think so. Like, I think Apple is curious about crypto. You know, we've seen that in some of the relaxation of their policies. I think, you know, they're really just concerned about the trust and safety aspect and making sure that, you know, if they do take steps in this direction, users aren't going to get rugged. So I don't think they're in a place to like say, okay, iOS 17 drops tomorrow. It's going to have a wallet. But, you know, I think it's one of the things that, you know, I think they'd be negligent if they're not thinking about it in the context of their wider digital wallet strategy. But I think it's going to take a lot of time and a lot of just mainstream, sort of demand, I think, before it happens. Like Apple is never sort of, is hardly ever that sort of early adopter. They often sort of come in a bit later with a very polished product and they do it really well.
And a strong opinion about what it should be used for. And I think that's where crypto is really struggling right now. I don't think we'll see a Apple wallet interface for quite some time. But I think where you will see this play out is in their developer strategy. I think they will, at the hardware level, allow use of the secure enclave for key generation for like crypto for public key pairs. They'll allow one layer of abstraction above that for you to use the device as a signing device, but it won't be an Apple wallet. I think they'll allow developers to build crypto things on the platform. They'll watch, they'll learn, build an opinion. And then, yeah, Chris, to your point, like, I think it'll come as part of their, you know, Apple Card, Apple Wallet-y kind of strategy. And who knows, maybe they even do something like Floor where a lot of the initial use cases are centered around Apple ecosystem uses versus just like straight up cash. But we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, Apple is, you know, one of the largest sellers of digital goods out there. Like between Apple, between Amazon, you know, you have books, you have movies, you have apps. I think, you know, a lot of the tech that at least Apple is using for that, as any developer who's submitted an app knows, is maybe a bit long in the tooth. Like the App Store is built on the remains of iTunes. I could see them sort of looking towards blockchain tech as a way to sort of both sort of reinvigorate and sort of robustify those platforms. But also, I think it ties in a lot with this sort of concept of digital items and digital ownership. you know, when we were talking about Amazon earlier in the year, who have been very quiet lately, I just want to point out. But when we were talking about Amazon, you know, I think the killer app for blockchain and Amazon is, you know, your Kindle bookstore. You can now sort of resell your books and have that sort of secondary economy of digital items. You know, I think it makes sense for, you know, those gatekeepers in the sort of digital stuff ecosystems.
I'm really enjoying the word robustify right now. I think that was a particularly choice use of ifying a word.
So I think that's really interesting. So if you call the iTunes API, if you call the App Store API right now, the name of every app is still returned as track name, which is one of my favorite like little anachronisms that's hidden under that. I actually agree with you. I think before Apple is likely to make a crypto wallet that users can touch and feel, I could actually imagine a world where they create a headless two-sided marketplace for on-chain goods. Like they are interested in being the intermediary for when money changes hands between developers and users in a world where that increasingly becomes extended to user to user. I don't see that they have a lot of choice, but explore intermediating that. Allow marketplace functionality to be really, really simple inside of apps. But yeah, whether it's that 30% or not, like have some revenue model associated with that. It's a long shot, but I am interested to see if they do something there.
I'm interested that this hasn't came up with the sort of various cases from the European Union and sort of other jurisdictions where they're like, okay, you must allow third-party payment mechanisms, third-party app stores or whatever on your devices. I wonder if sort of this would be driven from the Apple end or whether this is something that is just the next inevitable step of sort of legislation around in-app or sort of on-platform commerce.
And if you can't legally lock someone in, and the best way to keep hold of that revenue is to make it easier to adopt it that way than it is. And then you create new like social network effect lock-ins. Like liquidity is actually an incredible opportunity to lock people in, not by, you know, preventing people doing other things. You can buy and sell yourself in any marketplace you want, but you have every other developer on the app store on like the other side of liquidity for anything that's through the Apple marketplace. Like I could actually completely imagine liquidity being a great source of lock-in for Apple if they built their own marketplace. We're pretty far down in crazy land now though. It'd be pretty fun.
CK, you mentioned something really interesting, like the, especially on the European reg side of things, MiCA specifically didn't reference anything to do with NFTs. It was very focused on like tokens, crypto, Rails, DeFi as well, but didn't really focus on NFTs. I do wonder which way it will go, whether something that like a big company like an Amazon or Apple does pushes something like MiCA to be extended toward all digital assets, including NFTs, or whether those big entities will fast follow after regulation is set. My gut feeling is like the former. You know, Apple is a really interesting one. One of the things we've got right at the bottom of the show notes is that they mentioned NFL rivals, which we've mentioned a bunch on the show that CK hates because of the throwing mechanism. That was named as like the game of the day, and that incorporates NFTs. Like NFTs are like a big part of that game proposition. As we mentioned, they're becoming a little bit looser on the app restrictions. So maybe there are some super small tailwinds there, maybe enough to get excited perhaps.
I think so. I mean, you look at NFL rivals, like at the end of the day, the NFTs are just in-app purchases. None of the sort of 2 million people who've downloaded it, or at least very few of them, actually know or care that these are NFTs. For them, they are buying new helmets, body armor, strips, whatever, for their favorite NFL players. And they're just competing with other players within that sort of metaverse. I think what we'll see is sort of more like new standards arising to sort of cover these digital items that allows for tradability. It allows for permissionless sort of integration. A lot of the sort of things that you get with your current NFT standards. Will they be NFTs? Yes. Will they be the NFTs that we're used to sort of trading and that we all know and love? Maybe, maybe not. Maybe they'll push other standards. You know, ultimately, having these things on a blockchain makes so much sense.
Any final thoughts before we move on, Chris Madden?
I think we just about covered it.
Fantastic segue into Apple and Android-based apps. Artifact have launched CryptoKicks IRL. I don't know if you folks saw this, but it's essentially a app that allows you to connect your CryptoKick IRL NFT to the physical sneaker. You can control the lights on the sneaker and the tightness of the sneaker via your app, which is pretty interesting. Firmware updates, all done in-app, and the actual app experience is pretty flawless. Like, you download it, it prompts you to either make an account or connect your wallet. You connect your wallet, it shows you your inventory. It's like a full-on, like, Artifact dashboard for people that are digital sneakerheads, seemingly. I think this was a pretty interesting move. It's probably one of the sleekest, like, Web3, not to offend you, CK, Web3 native apps that I've seen. But you're not too smiley about this. What's wrong? What's wrong with CryptoKicks IRL?
No, I'm going to throw a flag here. Like, you know, a few months ago, you were weirded out when I told you my soap dispenser was connected to Wi-Fi. But now you're sort of saying
your
these sneakers were
connected to Wi-Fi.
Long story, don't ask questions. But now you're, you know, all in favor of these sneakers that you can control via app and apply firmware updates. What's going on here?
No, no, look, like, I'm not saying this is for me. I just think it's quite interesting, right? Like, you know, if you're a sneakerhead and you really love digital sneakers and you're going to collect the physical ones as well, it makes total sense. And also they're looking at doing like quests and move to earn stuff within the app directly connected to the sneaker. And yeah, it seems like this is either the next generation of fashion or it's going to be a Black Mirror episode in season 7.
So these are basically shoes from Back to the Future, right?
I've never actually watched Back to the Future, but kind of.
Yeah, he's like in 2012 or something like that, and he has like hoverboards and these like self-lacing sneakers. So he puts them on, they tighten, and then he's able to continue on his journey or whatever he does in the movie.
You can actually have presets as well. So you can be like CK at the gym, CK on a walk, or CK at dinner, and you like click those and it instantly like expands or contracts depending on the, you know, whatever you've preset it at.
Is this a thing I need? Like, do I need different shoe tightness at dinner than I need while I'm cooking?
Yeah, I was wondering that as well. Like, if we were sharing shoes, I'm sure that would be good because then we can adjust to each of our
preferences. I don't
want to
share shoes with you, sir.
But yeah, I thought you'd say that. So yeah, I'm not quite sure the point of that.
So wait, how are these things marketed? Like, this whole thing, like a sneaker that's attached to an NFT, it feels like a thing that's designed to take, look at, go, ooh, isn't that cool, put in a box, and then one day it's worth money. Like, is there an actual consumer value prop here that people are walking around in these shoes saying, oh my God, these shoes are great, this changed my life, because now I can change the tightness of my shoelaces without using my hands?
In the same way that, like, does Starbucks Odyssey do anything other than, like, just add a little bit of cool friction to you buying coffee and rewards you of something you do anyway every day in your life?
Yeah, it's a rewards program. Like, the proposition is clear.
I didn't want to say the L word. It's another loyalty program.
Great.
Kind of.
But the loyalty program solves like a well-known shape of problem, which is like, I get free shit for doing the stuff that I was going to do anyway. Why the shoes?
In 15 years, Chris Madden, when you go to an event and your sneakers auto-open the door to this event and it's very exclusive for Artifact holders, I'm going to be laughing. I don't hold any Artifact shoes, by the way.
This is my like entire thesis on your phone. Like, this is why I've spent 10 years building on your phone. Your phone is the thing that goes everywhere with you.
So actually, that's a good point though, right? Like, in, okay, the 56% of kids aged 8 to 12 have a smartphone. In 10 years, will those kids think it's weird that you can't interact with your sneakers via your phone?
Maybe, although I think they're going to have to find something. Like, ultimately, like, wearables are really interesting. And I think health-oriented wearables, yeah, I love this thing, are like really, really smart. It comes down to the same thing as we're struggling with everything in crypto, which is like, why? Like, what is it designed to do? And who knows, maybe we come up with a really compelling prop for like why your shoes should be smart enabled and Like, I do think that could be, like, honestly, it annoys me. I have to, like, if my shoes were a sensor and that was a really great way of collecting data, like, love it, totally all on board with that. But when you think about 56% of kids having a cell phone, which is the number that you shared, my guess is the other 44% aren't buying high-end digitally connected sneakers. My guess is that's as much an economic opportunity kind of stat as it is a, like, consumer interest stat. And high-end digital connected shoes probably will have no greater penetration than that, because it's always going to be cheaper to get a pair of Pimp soles.
Yeah, I sort of compare those trainers with wheels on the bottom. Like, yeah. Sure, you see them sort of once in a while on the street, but most people are not going to go for this. People are not going to go for customizable light-up sneakers that auto-lace. You know, I think there's the price component. I think there's the utility. I think fashion plays a lot into this. You know, if I wore these to the office, I'd be ridiculed.
So one of the things I wanted to develop this topic into is, and Nike have obviously gone pretty hard at Web3 with Dot Swoosh, and it looks like they're going to do a bunch of stuff. Is it weird to you guys that Dot Swoosh are going for, like, something super simple, mass market, like very cheap, and then Artifact, who are, like, part of the business, are still going after this hyper niche, curated, very specific, deeper wallet, digital sneakerhead type? Like, there's not really a convergence of those two strategies. And I don't know if that's on purpose or not. Like, the more it stays like this, the more I think Nike just bought Artifact because they were like, well, we don't want them to compete with us in 5 years. And if that happens, if that's the reason, then fine. But, like, it just feels like these two things are quite far away from each other.
I mean, I see Artifact as more of the sort of higher end, high tech experimental play, whereas Swoosh is the sort of thing that will make these things go mainstream. You know, Artifact, you've had people drop thousands of dollars on the tokens. You know, you have a very sort of high net worth audience there and folks who are really deep into crypto. Whereas I think Swoosh, the goal is more, okay, let's bring people in. You know, we're still going to use NFTs, but we're going to try and make them more accessible. And we're going to really just focus on this sort of digital sort of thing versus piling on extra tech around it. Like, it's the same if we go back to sort of Apple and you look at things like Vision Pro versus the Apple Watch. You know, Vision Pro is for the high tech, cyberpunk sort of cutting edge rich people, like the two of us, I imagine, Chris. Whereas the everyman device is the Apple Watch. And it's just segmenting the audience in a way that I think makes sense.
Yeah, that definitely tracks for me. And Pat, you probably know more about this than I do, but I perceive this to be true in this market. In most consumer businesses, you create a small number of extremely high price, high luxury goods, and then you use those to peddle $60 Air Force Ones to everyone in the country because you have $2,000 Jordans that are, like, super, like, high-end and compelling. And then you use the IP overlap to create some, like, visual distinction, visual, like, similarities between the things. And, like, that's been the playbook to sell relatively expensive for most people, but generally actually quite cheap and affordable stuff to 100 million Americans for the last 40, 50 years or so. Like, it seems like just taking that playbook and playing it out in a new space. I'm making a lot of assumptions about how Nike business works, and I know almost nothing about sports fashion or Nike, but...
When Nike acquired Artifact, one of the reasons I thought it was super smart is because during the pandemic, like, all of Nike's margins got squeezed, like, in terms of, like, physical good creation, transport, their supply chain just got completely messed up and repriced, and all their margins were depleted to some extent. And, you know, Nike are $45 billion revenue business, and so that's not a big deal in the short term. In my view, I thought Artifact as a purchase was kind of trying to future-proof their business. And so, to, like, your point and CK's point in having this kind of smaller niche audience that are your repeat, more premium customers, it makes sense. But I just think there's like a link missing here. Like, how does Artifact become the kind of innovation hub and the studio for Nike internally so that, you know, one of the 20 ideas they come up with in the next 3 years is scalable and stops them having to rely on that kind of not very scalable supply chain? So that's kind of where I see it. But yeah, again, the other thing is like, we don't know just how much they help internally, how much Artifact help mold that kind of broader Web3 strategy for Nike. So we're kind of throwing darts at a dartboard here. I do just think from the outside in, there is less coherence than I would have thought. Because we are like nearly 2 years in now, right? Like in, it was December 2021 that Artifact got acquired, and you would have thought by now there would have been some bigger imprint.
I'll look at it from the other side and say, I think Nike is one of few companies in the world where you can see any coherence in the Web3 strategy. And so I think they are head and shoulders above pretty much anyone else right now. And it's not, for like, to Chris's point earlier, I don't think anyone knows what the value prop is that's really going to land for Web3. And I think while they may be bets that connect, they may also just be different bets that some of them get killed and others of them run off.
Yeah, like I think Nike especially is just, you know, it sees, you know, a lot of their users, a lot of their buyers getting into crypto, getting into NFTs. It's like, we want to be part of that culture and we want to make sure we're relevant for those people. Like, I think it's totally feasible that Artifact was just a big bet. You know, these brands, they have a lot of money slushing around for research and development. In a previous life, did a lot of work with the Anheuser-Busch disruptive innovation team. And like everything you could imagine where technology and alcohol intersected, they had fingers in those pies. From like horns that you subtoot and then it automatically orders alcohol, to buttons that you press that automatically order alcohol. There's a lot of things that you press and it ordered alcohol. But yeah, they're looking at sort of all of these technology trends and trying to figure out how they apply to their business. And, you know, some of them stick, other ones don't.
You know what the saddest thing for me was? Amazon Dash buttons, I actually thought were brilliant. They were so helpful.
My favorite Amazon Dash thing was that like wand that scanned barcodes and you could just talk to it like Alexa. It was so useful to like wander around the kitchen, scan things, and it adds them to your shopping list. And they discontinued it.
You know what I think the perfect place to do this is? A bin. Make a bin that you just scan the QR code on anything you put in the bin and it reorders it as it thinks is necessary. I'm going to put it on Kickstarter. The auto replenishment bin.
That sounds like a rubbish idea, Chris.
Oh, look at that.
Burn. Right, complete tangent now. We are going a degen as hell. So the Banana Gun bot, Telegram trading bot, got wrecked. Their token, Banana, dropped 98% after pumping 1,398%, all because of an exploit in their contract. CK, do you want to run us through this one?
Yeah, I mean, it seemed like this was just a logic error in the contract. So when you sold their token, you were meant to pay a commission, but apparently that just didn't work and no one found it out until the contract was copy-pasted into ChatGPT, which it's a bit embarrassing. We've talked about this before. Like, I think there's just a lot of teams in the space who are maybe not used to delivering software at scale. They're certainly not used to writing systems that sort of handle millions of dollars of transactions. And, you know, it's a culture where you don't seem to get you don't have a big emphasis on testing, software quality, or even auditing contracts. So you're left in this sort of weird place where, okay, you've discovered a bug, you may or may not have lost a lot of money over it. And then you need to figure out a way forward, which is hard when you're obviously working with immutable smart contracts on a blockchain. Yeah, I don't know what to say here. Like, I read this sort of Twitter thread and the description of what was wrong, and it seemed like a very simple sort of issue with the contract. I don't know if the guy who wrote it was just too tired and didn't bother to test, but it's just crazy.
I'd be really interested to hear if they share the names of their reviewers. So they claimed that they had two audits. And the bug is literally, instead of taking the tax off, they don't charge it, but then they also give it on the other side. So they're just inventing currency. It's like even the most basic, like look at or single test case for taxes would have found this bug. And so if a real auditor actually audited it, yeah, that's probably going to mean trouble for them. But my guess is that two audits amounted to, you know, asking some kid on the internet, hey, did good, look at this, look good? Yeah, okay, cool. And I'm sure some of them are really, really good, but it just does not seem like a rigorous audit. Like a rigorous audit could and should have found this. And I'd also be interested to see their test suite. It should be much more normalized to post test suites for contracts with the contract.
I think with Frentech, and that's like our next topic, like running hard, these types of things being so pertinent still in the ecosystem, even though we're in the kind of depths of the bear, I do think people are kind of just bored, right? Like crypto's gone sideways, and I know kind of dumped over the last couple of days, but predominantly gone sideways over the last 60 days. And 60 days is a long time in crypto. Crypto is the kind of place that like every 4 to 6 weeks, there's something major announcement or a big crash or a scam or a hack that kind of captivates people's attention. There hasn't been that many big things happen over the last 60 days. I think that's normal because of summer.
Frentech. I think Frentech is the thing we've entertained ourselves with for the most part.
Exactly, right? Exactly. Before we speak about Frentech, Chris, why don't you tell us the latest from Floor?
Oh, man. Was not expecting that one. So what's happening at Floor? A few fun things happening right now. So straight up share it. We have about 70 folks in our social beta right now. And I think in the next 2 days, they're actually going to be able to use a lot of Floor Social in the app, which we're really excited about. And yeah, building hybrid web native for the first time, which has been cool. And I'm really excited to see what people do with it. We're also going to be shipping trait floors for a group of users today, tomorrow, across all of their collections. So big moves there. And then we got some pretty big stuff happening next week. I don't think I can share this one. I think it's embargoed to the partner. But there will be free stuff to get in the Floor app. So just come back and get the free stuff.
Everybody likes free stuff. This weekend, Frentech volumes overtook OpenSea. And CK, I want to get your take. The euphoria we've seen with Frentech, do you think there's anything sustainable within this as a proposition beyond like rife speculation that will eventually kind of dissipate when there's some interesting things to do? Or do you think there'll be some iteration of this that makes sense on a mass consumer scale?
I don't know. I've been wondering this myself. Like part of me, you know, sees similarities to like last summer when you started having free mints, speculation around that go wild. You had Goblin Town. You know, it gave people stuff to do. And, you know, I think that's the biggest thing Frentech has going for it right now. It's simple. It works. And, you know, people are making decent amounts of money from it. You know, they're building a lot of sort of rails for social graph in Web3. And I think they can do some interesting stuff with that if that's where they want to. I don't know. I'm not sure at the minute whether they'll have longevity or if this is a flash in the pan. And, you know, in a month's time, it'll be like Frentech, friend who? So I think we'll have to see.
Bonding curves have some great properties and some really bad ones. And the nature of the bonding curve that you sell keys on means as long as there is more new people entering the space than there are people there, there is tremendous opportunity for fast upside. And so fundamentally, that means there will continue to be speculation because of the tax for the key holder, for the key creator on key sales. That initial bump also creates a quick round of buys and sells, which creates commissions, which then creates like incentive to stay because it looks like you made a bunch of money. So there's like this really interesting property where everyone makes money on day one because a bunch of bots buy and sell their keys, trying to make like a little bit of upside on every user that comes in. So everyone's incentivized like, oh, wow, this is cool. Like I made $100 on my first day. I'm going to make $10,000 on my fifth day. And then as a speculator, both a savvy and a non-savvy, there are opportunities to early on as people come in, make money. When the average person is already there, that's when you start to get to the question of, is a, you know, reasonably expensive key-gated set of chats a useful primitive for social in Web3? And I think at that point, we learn the answer is no, not really. Like I don't foresee it being a really important building block for Web3 social. But I think as long as you can expect to reasonably make money by spending your time on it, people will do it.
Yeah, I think there is something about the world we're in, which is so influencer, direct consumer influenced, so to speak. Like I know the really populous YouTubers, the Sidemen, played a like charity soccer game and it sold out like a Premier League stadium and they got more views on their highlights than basically any professional team have got all season. And so the power of influencers is greater than it's ever been. And I mean, you know, we talked about this with Creator League last week, right? Like 1/8 of the pie kicked up a fuss and the whole thing broke down because this person had 3 million followers on social and so on and so on. As Chris mentioned, like the primitives that they're building are interesting if you think about the kind of direction of travel in terms of how consumers are being influenced. I just don't know if the kind of rife speculative nature of it fits somewhere there. I mean, I can see some version of it, which is maybe more playful, but yeah, I'm just not certain on where it kind of ends up. Moving on to more stories, wider Web3 stuff, banter, and any other business, feel free to chime in if you have any strong thoughts on any of these topics. Mochaverse, the Animoca brand NFT thing, raised $20 million. The Nouns DAO fork went live after a 26% vote in favor. Bitcoin Ordinals hit 30 million in subscriptions. Justin Bieber, his producer, is launching NFTs that give you some sort of royalty to the original soul, which is quite interesting. Did you see that, CK?
1% of streaming revenue, which is 1% of virtually nothing these days. It'd be interesting how they open up the accounting for that side of things.
So interesting. Haven't artists spent the last 10 years saying that streaming is garbage and they don't make any money from it? And now they're like, but here, fans, you can have 1% of nothing.
Yeah, hey, it's easy to give away nothing, right?
I've actually always expected Spotify to get into this game. Like, they have a Web3 team and a commerce team, and it's such a natural platform to start to, you know, be able to build and deepen that relationship with the artist and make it potentially financial. I do think there's a how big is the pie to share kind of problem, but also a regulatory problem, because as soon as you start talking about royalties and sharing.
I've always been confused as to how Royal, the Blau run company, are regulatorily compliant, if that's a word. And this is kind of a similar thing, but on their own rails. But it is, I think it's interesting. But like you can fractionalize stuff like NFTs, but now we're talking about revenue, right? Yeah.
You can do anything.
There's a lot of people. And so if you look at what, you know, Public did and Otto, the company that they bought, like,
yeah,
they are offering it as a security. Like there's actually a lot of precedent right now that says actually fractionalizing something, but like you kind of do need to be, you need to register it.
NFL and Reddit launched NFTs for each team on the opening weekend of the NFL, but they didn't sell out very well. I was looking at it, they were $25 a piece, and I think the most I saw sold was like 100 out of 500, which was quite surprising. I thought they'd fly off the shelves, but maybe Reddit users are now quite wise to these marketing-led partnerships.
whys are just there's so many of them. Like Reddit have really sort of oversaturated the market. Like I'm looking through the store right now and like I see things.
Don't you kind of have to do that when you have 20 million holders though? Like you kind of have, you have to become the supermarket, right?
I think so. Like you always need your thing on the shelf. And like looking at some of the stuff that they did a few months ago, like I'm still seeing lots of supply there. You know, if this was a typical sort of NFT drop, you know, people would say, hey, this is a failure. No one's buying this stuff. But, you know, I think the way Reddit is going, this is entirely what they've planned. They want options for everyone at a $10 to $25 price point.
Yeah, I don't think they'll be worried at all. I think the NFL will be a bit annoyed, but I don't think Reddit, I think Reddit will be like, eh, if they sell out in the next 6 months, all good. Like, market that shit and see if anyone wants it, right?
Yeah, I'm also curious, is Reddit the place where sports fans go to talk about sports ball?
Well, again, right, like when you have 20 million fans, 20 million like users, you have to kind of like try and cater to everyone, right?
Yeah. But that could definitely be very indicative of just why, you know, we're not seeing much movement on these.
Next, Vinny Hager Open Edition raises 150 ETH, which is quite cool. Apparently Vinny was in London looking for a mural to paint. I got tagged in that post. Like, Pet, do you know anywhere? I was like, this is way out my comfort zone, CK. I don't know walls to paint on. It's not my thing. Shaquille O'Neal sued over Astral's NFT project. Deadfellas Gaming Mint launches. NFL Rivals hits 2 million downloads after it was named Game of the Day on the App Store. Sugartown's first NFT mint is happening while you're listening today on Wednesday the 13th of September. Sugartown, the Zora created Web3 game. In crypto, Stake, the gambling crypto product, was hacked for $41 million, apparently by North Korean hacking group, whose name has escaped me. Vitalik Buterin was hacked on Twitter. He mentioned he was SIM swapped, but the only reason he had his number on Twitter because he had to sign up for Twitter Blue. So, yeah, strong, good going X again. Strong stuff. Apple have acquired the rights to SBF's book for $5 million, and Circle have started minting USDC on Cosmos.
Apple, the company, Apple that makes the iPhone, acquired the rights to the SBF story.
Apple buys roots to book on SBF for $5 million.
Yeah, I think they want to make a movie of it.
Gotcha. So they're going to make the Apple TV original on SBF.
I think so.
Yeah.
This is one of those like weird, like Google and everyone's kind of been creating these holding companies with lots of different like subsidiaries that are more focused. That story would like make a lot more sense if it was Apple Entertainment buy the rights to... But just like Apple buying the rights feels weird.
The stories sell, right? Isn't there there's the Wall Street Bets movie coming out, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think I read a review of it this morning. I don't think it got good ratings, but I want to watch it.
CK, man, you're at the reviewer's behest. Come on, think for yourself.
Oh, it's called Dumb Money. And it opens tomorrow, it looks like.
Wow. I'm flying over, guys.
Yes. Let's go see a movie.
Is it still like that? The US gets films earlier? I haven't been to the cinema in probably 5 years now, so I'm still wondering if that's a thing. If so, I'll take the red eye, CK, is what I'm saying.
I think so. Like, I don't know. When did Barbie come out over there? Did they sort of sync it up?
Yeah, you did get that. No, you got that earlier as well.
Because I know the digital copy has just came out.
Oh, you can watch Barbie at home now?
No, you did get Barbie earlier.
Yes.
I still haven't watched it.
I might do that. I watched it at the movies, but it's highly entertaining.
Yeah, I haven't watched it, so maybe I should buy it tonight. Anyway, thanks so much everyone for listening. You can find us at the Floorcast, not the Barbiecast. You can find Floor at Floor on Twitter. You can find Chris M at floor.social/CM, which is a new one for us. You can find CK at C Cahonan on X or floor.social/CK. You can find me at Pet Berisha on X, PETBERISHA. Rate us 5 stars and all that jazz if you thought it was a good episode. Just remember, none of what we have said is financial advice, just great advice. And we'll have more Floorcast for you next week.